Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, Hogan, listen to this, Brent. Hogan, back in the day, he can probably tell the stories. These are some of the best stories in the world. When he used to go to Japan, you know, when the big hotshot American would come over to Japan, you know, everything's real old school over in Japan, far more over than here. What was the guy? Inoki. And, but, you know, and Hogan was on top of the world when he was wrestling for Vince. Well, sometimes he'd go over to Japan to pick up some money, and a lot of money. The Japan promoters would pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to have Hulk Hogan, you know, in the late 80s and early 90s, as hard as he was running, to come over and wrestle these guys. Well, because wrestling's so much different over there, it's more kind of shoot style, throw a lot of spud and stuff. Hogan felt one of these days when these guys would get in there and get a little cute, you know, maybe just try to knock him out or something like that. So he'd always carry a razor blade in his mouth and another one in his wrist. And so he'd always had a razor blade in his mouth ready to have to, if he had to, like, fight himself out of the ring. Is that not true?
Even here in the States, I did that.
I mean, even modern, like, let's say Vince would call you up and say, "Hey, we want to bring you back." You'd still carry a blade.
No doubt.
In your lip.
Yeah, it's like lacing your boots up. It was just habit. It's just what we did.
I used to go, you know, out wrestle and stuff like that. And you should see him. He takes a razor blade, Brennan, and he just cuts it down to nothing. So it's a sliver. And then puts a wrestling tape, little athletic tape over it. And then he puts it like it's a piece of tobacco in his cheek. And that's where he carries it without cutting himself.
Just the blade between your cheek and gum.
You've never cut yourself. What if a guy would
swallowed it a couple days.
Oh, my God.
Jesus, God.
You have?
Yeah, I drank a bunch of Miller Lights, went in there, and halfway during the match just swallowed it and forgot about it.
Did it tear up your asshole coming out?
No, I never had a problem with it. I just kept looking for it. I could never find it.
Out of your asshole? Out of your chin?
He's got a dozen razor blades in his, like, small intestine. Yeah.
No, that's how Hogan doesn't get prostate cancer. He just naturally gets it cut out by the razor blades that come down.
Have you ever bladed yourself too deep? Have you ever cut yourself too deep and you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
What are we going to say? What about what?
What about that guy that was on the plane today? Today, but was on the plane flying back from Vegas when Linda was on the plane getting her 19-year-old boyfriend drunk on the plane in first class. Is that crazy?
I think that might be a blessing in disguise because I had that guy's information.
Yeah, and then he said when he got off the plane, he couldn't believe
that she was fucking Tampa as bad as she was.
But
for how many years have you known her? Obviously, 20. That was her MO. Hate Tampa. Hated Willie. You bought her. You know. You build her a $9 million place. Place wasn't good enough. Too many rednecks here. No 24-hour sushi. I mean, all her standard template bullshit.
Yeah.
That was her MO. That was her MO.
Yeah, just hated everything.
But one time, tell us a story about, because all the fans on the Mark Sprint love Hogan wrestling stories. We can get into this Linda shit, you know, anytime. But anyway, the wrestling stuff. How about the time that you knocked out the Japan guy? And they held, and you couldn't leave the country until you went on TV and kind of like showed the fans they really didn't kill him.
No, I couldn't leave the country until Inoki woke up in the damn hospital and asked me to come to the hospital and do a press conference. But what happened, we were in the...
Inoki's that powerful.
Well, yeah, he was the man. He was like the Muhammad Ali, the Hulk Hogan of Japan. He'd never been beaten. He actually came here and did that so-called shoot fight with Ali where he crawled on his back. I don't know if you saw that ridiculous abortion.
No.
But anyway, when we went over there, we were working, and he got so full of himself. You know, he started believing his own hype.
Inoki,
yeah, and he's a great guy and all that stuff, but he started with Ricky Dozan, the big gangster there, and they did the old dojo stuff where they would shoot and shoot and shoot. Everybody had the broken up ears, and it was Pride that was part of the same company with Shinnippon Pro Wrestling. But he kept thinking he was a shooter, and he really wasn't.
He was a worker, not a shooter.
He was a worker, and he thought he was going to shoot. I guess he wanted to pick on me, so he called me to the hotel the night before. He goes, "Tomorrow, we shoot." I go, "Huh? Shoot what?"
How big was he?
He was 240, 6'2", 6'3". Right. But, you know, he was a Carl Gotch guy. He broke into Carl Gotch, so he knew how to hook.
Right.
Submission holds. I'm like, okay, whatever.
So out of nowhere, he just wants to fight you straight up.
But he says, "Tomorrow we shoot."
"We're going to shoot." I said, "What do you mean shoot?" "We shoot. What's up?" I said, "Okay, we'll shoot." "Okay, we'll shoot." So I didn't tell anybody. Andre was with me. I should have told Andre. You know.
Now, were they all afraid of Andre?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
But I was the last guy, Gene, in the main event. So right. Everybody wanted to jump on the bus and leave me because I had this Japanese chick there, Chaco, that was running me and Brutus back and forth back in the day.
Doing other things?
No, not doing other things, but she would.
Just like, asking.
No, like get us taxis, and she was with the New Japan
She's
office.
She's like the Mama-san kind of deal.
Yeah, she was with the New Japan office. So if the bus left, she would order us a taxi.
Right.
Tell them in English where to take us, this and that and the other. And so all of a sudden, you know, all the.
Now Brutus was with you?
No.
Oh.
But Andre was there and Dick Murdoch, and so the guy Gene's left. I didn't say anything about shooting. I got in the ring and started locking up. He got in that, woo, that lotus flower pose.
Right.
So I'm like, okay.
Do it again. Woo, do it.
Yeah, whatever. I tried to lock up with him a couple times, didn't lock up. He's real snug. And when he
Now, when you guys would wrestle, who would call the shots? Because there's a language barrier.
He didn't talk over there. He couldn't talk to me. He didn't understand shit. Just how to, it's like dancing.
Right.
So anyway, he would act like he's going to shoot, but then he'd grab a headlock. I go, huh? You know, and then he squeezed real hard. I'm like, what's this idiot doing? You know, this isn't, he's not shooting. I mean, it's like.
We're working, but he's trying to shoot.
And he's trying to hurt me. I'm like, okay, so I squeeze his ribs and pop a rib out and tell him to lighten up. I'm going to spike him on his neck. And he kept going back and forth. Finally did like the test of strength thing, but it's a work.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But he's trying to shoot with it. So when I went to grab his hand, he kicked me right in the balls. I said, what the fuck is that?
You know, and meanwhile, you guys still can't understand each other.
Okay, we're trying to make it believable. So finally,
they got in front of like what a whole
22,000 people. So right. Finally, I did it again. He kicked me in the balls. God, you son of a bitch! So it just pissed me off so bad.
Brent,
so
guess what? Tomorrow we shoot.
Yeah. So finally, you know, he went back and grabbed a hold again, like a work. And I was pissed. Said fuck the shit. So I threw him in the ropes. And as soon as he hit the ropes, by the time he turned his head, I put my elbow right in his temple as hard as I could, wide open.
Oh.
Party over.
Done.
He did not get back up, bro.
Now, so that's when the shit happened because
so then
people
they rolled
in Japan
him in the
thought
ring,
you killed him.
Slapped him around. He's laying on his back, knocked out, and the referee, Peter Takahashi's going, Uzzup, continue. I said, dude, he's knocked out.
Yeah, what were you
continue.
Doing? Were you kind of freaked
knocked
out?
Him out? What'd you do?
Well, I figured he'd wake up, but he didn't wake up.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, all the Japanese young boys jumped to the ring, and they all cornered me. They're all yelling at me. I'm saying, okay.
That's what they call like the understudies, the young boys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The ones that wash your back and lace your boots up and carry your
they
back.
They wash your back.
And Inoki and all the Japanese guys. So I said, okay, I'm fucked. Because I know all the gaijins have left on the bus. The Americans are gone. So out of nowhere, this crazy doctor comes in there, opens this black bag, pulls this needle out like Pulp Fiction.
Right.
Plunges it in his heart.
No way.
I swear to God, it's on the tape. Inoki versus Hogan.
Right. On YouTube.
IWGP
right.
Championship. And
right.
They shoot the adrenaline right in his heart. I said, you're going to fucking kill him. He's just knocked out. He's not dead. They're hitting him in the heart with adrenaline. So I get out of the ring. You know, they get me back. In the taxi, they got two Japanese guys with me, and they're cussing me out all the way back. I'm going, oh boy, here we go. So they take me to Kia Plaza.
There.
Yeah, so I have to change hotels. I start getting death threats. I keep changing hotels. About 5 days later, the office comes and gets me at some little shitty hotel on the other side of Shinjuku, and they take me to the hospital room. There's all these camera crews there. And I got Inoki's belt, dude. He wanted this IWGP title. He had it made for himself. It was real gold, had all those jewels.
But you got it.
And I got it. You know. And so now he makes nice to me, has a press conference, Hulk Hogan accident, you know, good competition, shoot fight. I'm going, shoot fight? What the fuck's he talking
right,
about?
Right.
He's trying to make everybody think it was a shoot. I just got pissed off and knocked him out.
Right.
He was halfway working, halfway shooting, picking the spots. I said, this sucks, dog.
Now and you couldn't leave the country until
no,
he
so
did that.
So it was about 5 days. And then he called a press conference. I got my passport back. I left. And I had to come right back 4 months later and do a job for him and give him the belt back.
Now, you got to tell us one more story, man, because the fans love this shit. Bryn, did you ever hear the story where he was in Africa? Was it Africa?
Oh, Jesus.
South Africa, right?
South Africa. And a guy put a gun to his head when Hogan went to ask for his money. It was him and who all went
Terry Funk.
You and Terry Funk. And you've been warned about, said, don't go there, man. Those guys are fucking crazy. But the guy offered you like 70 grand, didn't he?
Well, Terry Funk actually was 30. And Terry Funk.
Now, what year is this? 80?
I don't know. It was a long time ago.
Right.
Long time ago.
Now, is it why you get the good Hulk Hogan run going up with Vince?
It was back in 78.
So you still
before
ain't got...
I got fired and right before, you know, before I went to Minneapolis. But
right. Terry right before, Funk, right before
Terry Funk. Yeah. Terry Funk was real good friends of mine. He says, dude, let's go over to Africa, do this one thing. I'll wrestle you. I'll drop the NWA strap to you.
Right.
You know, we'll just keep it quiet. You know, no problem. So there's two parts to the story. One's the gun, and one's me being scared to death Terry Funk was going to kill me afterwards. But at the end of the day, I was supposed to have all the money put in my bank account before I left.
So you and Terry Funk go wrestle.
Yeah, and the money never got in my account. Well, as soon as you land. We're in Budapest, Swan, South Africa, and whatever that resort was there. I can't remember the name. Sun City.
Sun City, that's right.
And so we get there.
God, he's pretty well-traveled, is he not?
That's right.
They put us up in the rooms, give us money to gamble on. They brought me the four blondes, like the Rocky thing. They wanted me to make the entrance to and from the ring with the girls, the whole thing.
Like you're a Thunderlips.
Yeah, so I need my money before I go in the ring. Oh, my God. Da-da-da-da-da. So we didn't get the money. So Terry Funk goes, let's go wrestle. We went and wrestled. I didn't get the money,
Talking about 30 grand.
Yeah, 30 grand. I want my money before I leave the country. So finally, I had the American embassy come in, get involved. They cut a check for the 30 grand, really upset them. I cast a check in the casino. I get in.
So you got 30 grand on you, large.
I get in this, and I gave it back. I got in this Mercedes. I'm riding down this old dirt road from Budapest, Swan to the airport, and I'm talking about the people on the side of the road have the baskets on their head. You know, that's their culture.
Ned, you find that hot, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Basket on top of the head.
So anyway, I'm riding, and these guys keep screwing with a pistol, clicking it back at my face in the front. You know, two of these guys.
The two driver dudes.
Yeah, three guys in the front seat, two guys in the back seat, me, all crammed, all these bodyguard guys. Finally, I just put the money on the floorboard. I just left the money there. I knew they were going to kill me. Halfway through the trip, I put the money on the floorboard.
Did you tell them, here's your money?
I said, I don't want this money, bro. I'm out. I left the money there. I got to the airport. I called Terry Funk and said, bro, do not try to get your money. You'll never get out of the country. They'll kill you. Don't. And so you know who got us the money? Ruthie.
Your mom?
Yeah.
Your mom got you the money?
Yeah.
Nobody knows this story.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, we got back in the country. I told my mom what happened. She got pissed. So Ruthie back
Terry?
In the day. Yeah.
Fucking
She kept calling, put so much so much pressure on the American embassy, and whatever happened, they actually cut a check, sent me my money, and sent the money to Terry Funk.
Brent, how would you be driving to the airport, and the guys...
Now, listen to this part. This is
they're dry-firing their pistols at you.
This is what an idiot I was. Now, I've been strung out, scared to death. I fly straight from Budapest, Swana to Narita in Tokyo, because I'm supposed to go right in the ring as soon as I land. I was so tired, such an idiot, that when I was sworn to secrecy with Terry Funk, I wouldn't tell anybody the finish, because he was the main guy at Baba back then, over there with Baba, with Brody and all these guys.
Right.
I land, I'm so tired, I get off the plane, all these reporters went, oh, wow, Hulk Hogan from New Japan, you wrestled Terry, blah, blah, blah. I'm just getting off the plane, go, who won the match? I said, I did. I just said it. Why I said it, I'm like, oh my God, bro. It was like the worst thing you could ever say.
Because you dropped the belt.
He dropped the belt to me. I said, oh, I won. And I just thought it would just be like one of those wrestling mark questions. Dude, it was like the shot heard around the world. Terry Funk called me. I'm going to kill you, you son of a bitch. I was like, oh, my God, because he's nuts.
Right. And is he still alive?
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
So the old Terry Funk.
So, dude, I called his wife, Vicky. Oh, I'm going to apologize to Terry. Oh, he didn't want to talk to you. He's going to kill you. I'm going to, oh, shit.
Where did he live?
In Amarillo, Texas.
Right.
And, dude,
he's going to kill you.
I was so afraid of him, bro. I was scared to death he's going to kill me, because he's a bona fide nut.
Tell us a story in Kansas City where Bob Backlund, you were taking a shit, and he kicked the door down and
Harley
burned
up. Race.
I'm sorry. Harley Race kicked the door down and told everybody, because you came in. Because Vince came into his territory for the first time. It's right when wrestling hit television and there was no more territories left. Vince was taking the entire world by storm.
Yeah, we were just.
You were the guy.
We were just taking over all the local markets.
Right.
You know, and Harley Race.
Because before that, wrestling was real localized and territorial.
Right.
Right.
And so we started going into all these markets, St. Louis and all over. We just went into Kansas City. And Harley Race had been living there, 25, 30 years.
Was the end-all be-all.
NWA champion, local hero, like Eddie Graham was here.
Right.
Like Dusty Rhodes was here. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this TV gets broadcast in from New York. I'm the real WWF champion, brother. I'm coming to Kansas City Arena. They set the ring up that afternoon, and they called me and said Harley Race showed up at 2 in the afternoon, blind, drunk, and lit the ring on fire.
and he said, remember the good old days.
And he said, if you come to the building tonight, he's going to kill you.
Now, was he wrestling on the card?
No,
because he wasn't under contract.
The NWA with Crockett and these guys out of Georgia. So knowing as crazy as Harley was, he used to beat everybody to death and had that metal plate in his forearm, carried a gun. I figured, okay, I'm dead. So I went across the street from the arena and I drank at the Rusty Scupper all day.
Rusty
Scupper?
How do you remember all these places?
Because there was one in Minnesota where I used to hang out.
Right.
It's a chain restaurant. So I drank my ass off. I went back to the building, went scampering in when the matches already started. I was on last. I said, put my ass on fourth so I can get out of here before intermission, right?
Right.
So I'm in there taking a shizit, right?
And I got
my pants down. All of a sudden, Davey Boy Smith comes in. He's fucking here. The king is here. He's fucking here. He's got a gun. I pulled my pants up, didn't even wipe my ass.
He's got a gun.
Went running out in the hallway, and Harley Race, ah, I should blow your fucking kneecaps off, you piece of shit.
He had a gun.
He had a gun, bro. He's standing right there with a gun right by the side. He goes, I should blow your damn kneecaps off. Put the gun in the other hand. He goes, but I need a job. He shook my hand, and I said, well, I'll talk to Vince for you. I said, thank God. Jesus Christ. Now, that was crazy.
Now, when it came to, like, back in the day, like, the feuds between, you know, the baby faces and the heels, even though you guys could have been boys behind the scene, wasn't it like a rule of thumb where you couldn't hang out in public? Like, if you and Macho were against each other.
When it was true kayfabe, that's what
you said.
When it was true kayfabe,
right?
True kayfabe, you couldn't hang out. I was actually...
True kayfabe have opposite dressing rooms.
Yeah.
And the referee would go tell you the finish between the right?
In the ring.
Yeah.
They tell you the finish. Well, you wouldn't talk high spots, nothing. The true art of this business is to actually not talk at all. But if you're in the ring, you can call spots.
Right, you can call spots.
Yeah, but you know, the whole thing was, I was telling Nick a story on the phone the other day about the Portland territory, this promoter up there. Elton Owens.
Yeah, his nose bent like this. He had a hair lip. He talked like this.
Elton Owens.
And the trips were like 500 and 600 miles where Piper started and Billy Jack Haynes and all those guys back in the day. Trips were like 500 or 600 miles. You make like $40. You know, and Elton Owens always wanted the boys to shoot. I'll give you an extra $5 if you shoot for the first 5 minutes. So the boys, or $10, so the boys would work the shoot, you know.
Right. Oh,
they'd split the money. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right, right.
Oh, you're breaking my arm, tap. And, oh, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah, so,
you know, wrestling is such a carny integrant.
Oh, and totally.
Yeah, so the boys would work the shoot and, you know, split the money. But Elton Owens was such a cheapskate, he didn't pay anybody. And, you know, he'd talk about his wife, Betty, to the boy. Betty, she got a hair on her pussy. You know, and he was always bragging about his wife.
I want to meet Elton Owens. He did.
And he's always bragging about his wife. But he'd always make the baby faces and the heels ride together to save money. And because he was such a cheap ass, he wouldn't pay anybody. He goes, if you get in the wreck, heels and baby faces, Jesus Christ, crawl away. He'd tell them if they get in a wreck, a head-on collision, to crawl away.
To separate them.
Yeah.
To separate them.
So they wouldn't be, even though in the wreck and they're both bleeding like hell, there'd be one 50 yards from the other. Crawl away, kayfabe.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know,
crawl away.
Back in the day, Brent, like in Puerto Rico and stuff, when that Texas Hangman used to wrestle, he said like, he'd have a different, the baby faces and the heels would have different locker rooms. They wouldn't even dress together. And then the referee would put it all together in the ring.
Was DiBiase's
Bruiser Brody got killed in Puerto Rico because he wouldn't do a job?
Was Ted DiBiase's $1 million belt real?
Was Ted Spice is asking Mark question? Ask the question.
Well, I'm asking questions that are on my email. Was Ted DiBiase's $1 million man belt real?
What do you mean real?
Like real real diamonds.
Please.
It was, I don't know, I think it was like a $100,000 belt Vince had made at a jeweler, but it was compromised.
Isn't it true that Vince used to give you one belt a month because you'd do photo shoots with that belt when you're running so hard as a champion, and you'd sweat and the belt would get all gimmicked up, so you had like a brand new belt every month. Is that true?
I used to sweat so much, you know, because they put me in a hot box for like 3 and 4 hours and do interviews. I have to do 3 or 4 interviews for every market, like 3-minute interviews.
Right. But like, let me take something to South Penn.
Yeah, yeah. And next week, brother, and tonight, I just.
Right. For 4 hours at a time?
Yeah, for 4 hours at a time.
Bro, I could roll. I mean, I was, once I'd get rolling.
I just came in on the very end of that when I was hanging out with Terry with NWO. WCW, and we'd be in the locker room. He goes, man, I got to go do a hot box for 3 hours. I'd be like, what's the fuck the hot box? It's a room about half the size of this room. And they'd say, okay, Terry, it's Comcast Cable, and it's in South Bend. Yeah. He'd be like, let me tell you something.
This is the first week, first week.
I'll be at the Fort Wayne Coliseum, Comcast Cable, you know, and it'd be 150 of them, and you have to go and give them tonight, tomorrow night, next week, next Friday night,
and
you know.
Tonight's tonight.
Now, was that like an extra payday for you? Was that just part of the deal?
No, part of the deal. That's why I stayed ahead of the pack. But the weird part was that's like where Bret Hart got his rap from. I remember like it was yesterday. I was sitting in the hot box doing an interview, and Bret Hart and Owen Hart used to sit there and watch me.
Right.
And they'd come in and watch me, and one time I said, I'm the greatest there ever was, ever is, or ever will be, brother. And Bret picked it up and ran with it.
Yeah.
I went, wow.
So he stole your gimmick.
Now, let me ask you a question.
He didn't steal my gimmick. He just stole one of my lines and ran with it.
Would you say that those hot box interviews and those interviews and how you're able just to roll would be probably a major, major portion of your success because nobody could cut a promo like
well,
you.
Well, nobody did the local Taylor market, you know, like in St. Louis this week when you ride down the interstate. I'll be doing chin-ups off the arch, brother. And
right.
When you see the Checker Dome and you see the black cloud over the arena, it's not a 747. It's just a 24-inch python's coming in for a landing.
Right.
I personalize every venue.
Right, that way.
And make the people want to come. You
right.
know? It's kind of like what you guys are doing now with your you know stuff. You're going to all these places and putting on your shows.
Right, Bubba Palooza.
Yeah, Bubba Palooza. And these people feel like you're tangible. They can touch you. And they
we
know
just
you.
Sold out Atlantic City this Saturday night. 2,400 people.
Damn.
For just a stupid comedy show. Well, I shouldn't call it stupid comedy. Brent, did I ever tell you the story?
For a real quality show.
Hey,
buddy.
Did I ever tell you the story show. The first time that I met Hogan? Did I ever tell you the story the first time I met Hogan?
No.
He remembers, too.
I remember the Alamo.
It was
the white building.
It was at the fairgrounds. It wasn't even the big building.
No, it was the white building for a meet and greet during the day.
Right. Listen to this, Spice. In 1989, it was in San Antonio, Texas, and the WWE was coming, you know, running hard. And so they always, you know, they were great promotion. And so they got with the local Top 40 station, which was KTFM, my station. And they got the night guy, which was me. And it was going to be like have dinner with Hulk Hogan and Bubba the Love Sponge, you know, like 10 winners.
Now, was this before you started working a little bit, or were you training in the business?
No, I didn't even know anything. I didn't start working just a little bit until Tom Stone broke me in. Remember Tom Stone?
Minnesota.
Up in the
Jake
Minnesota.
McMillan, Jake the Melt Man.
You know, I fucked his daughter.
I know. Whatever.
Dee Dee Milliman.
Yep.
But Jake Millen's about that tall, you know that. Anyway, Spice, I didn't know Hogan. I mean, I knew Hogan and a huge fan, you know, wrestling fan. And so anyway, I met him at this restaurant, this little white restaurant down in downtown San Antonio. And then me and our listeners got to sit front row while he beat the shit out of somebody that night in San Antonio. And who would have known that we would have come on and be best friends? Isn't it such a small world?
Yeah, that's not.
Who would be know that you'd be my mental, spiritual, and financial guidance counselor at this point?
Hogan, poor Hogan and what he's going through right now.
I told you, bro, you want to hang around me, you're going to get some heat, brother.
If there was one place you could be right now doing one thing in the world, what would be like your dream day without all the drama, without all the heat?
If there was one place I could be for a moment?
Yeah. I mean, you know, just your ideal place to be.
Like, where's your favorite place? I would say your favorite place. You always used to love the Bahamas, but...
Well, no, I mean, that's an autograph session, a picture. If you really want to know from all the crazy books and Bible thumping, when you're totally happy and you're not compulsive thing and you're totally aware and present, happy in the moment, the one place where I'm totally like heaven on earth is in the ring.
Really?
Because nobody... I'm in total control, and it's kind of like I know it. And no compulsive thoughts. I'm just. It's almost like if a baby chokes, we quit worrying about everything. Thinking about, oh my God, let's save the baby.
The baby, right?
Or if we see a car accident and there's cars on fire, oh my God, let's save the person. You totally forget about everything. When I'm in the ring, I totally forget about every problem I have.
What was your?
I actually got so perverted on that thing like last week when I was in this warehouse out in California shooting Celebrity Championship Wrestling. I walked by the ring and I kind of got a little goosebump.
Get a little boner?
Almost.
Right.
The ring is like, yeah, it's my thing.
Have you ever had sex in the ring before?
No.
Never?
Mm-mm.
Well, you and Jen Dog got something to
hey,
look forward to.
Easy, brother.
Now, back in the day before
before
I met you, did you have a ring local that you owned?
No.
I thought somebody, like when you broke in the Giant, didn't you? I thought you had your own ring.
I went down to somebody's ring. Who knows? I don't remember.
Did you know that...
I think the Bushwhackers had a ring. I can't.
Did you know that Hogan's the one that broke in the Giant?
I didn't know that, no.
Yeah, man.
Who discovered? Did you discover him?
Chicago, yeah. I was playing basketball against Mr. T at halftime. Trying to raise
That's
money.
Just a funny story in itself.
Now, what happened?
Yeah, Mr. T at halftime. You know,
of a Bulls game?
It wasn't halftime. It was half court.
Right.
And I beat him. He's horrible. He's retarded playing basketball.
Mr. T.
And then I played Dana Bonaducci and beat him.
Right.
In the third week, it was a CBA basketball team.
Right.
Can't remember. It was some team in Chicago, CBA. They were people from Coca-Cola, and they were trying to raise the attendance, so they brought me in and like jacked the attendance up.
Right.
Then when I spanked Mr. T, it jacked the attendance up. Then I went to the local radio and said I took on Danny Bonaducci. They brought in a ringer the third week.
Paul.
They brought in Paul White. You know,
and he played for Tulsa, didn't he?
Yeah, he played basketball.
Wichita
State.
He played...
For Wichita State.
College basketball.
Yeah, for the Shockers.
Every time he went to shoot a basket, I'd pull his pants down or tap him. Because we became friends that way.
Now, was he a nice guy? Was he cool at the time?
Yeah. Okay. And after we did this, he came in the dressing room and...
Now, was he big back then?
The Jimmy guy's manager, Strouser.
Yeah, Jimmy Strouser.
Came in the dressing room and he goes, hey,
Limo Jim.
Yeah, Paul wants to talk to you about something. Paul was shaking his boots, scared to death of me. And he goes, hey, let me tell you something, brother. He did a Hulk Hogan imitation.
Right.
I went back and I said, man, you guys got to see this guy. This guy's like Andre, but a small version.
Right.
The big man's like Andre, but he's young. He hasn't become a big stinky giant yet, you know. He hasn't grown into his warts and his,
grown into his
hygiene
warts.
Yet.
How bad a hygiene did Andre have?
Paul, I mean, no, Paul's cool.
Did Andre
Paul's
have?
Paul's clean as a whistle. Andre never brushed his teeth.
What do you mean never brushed
never
his teeth?
Never brushed his
teeth. He was French.
Dude, Vince McMahon one time hooked Andre up to go to his dentist. This is a true story. And this guy had his office at his house. He actually put a cap on my tooth, this dentist. And they told me the story that when Andre sat down to have his teeth cleaned, that spinning like a polisher, that his, he got up, smacked the thing out of the way. He said it didn't even last 30 seconds. As soon as they hit Andre with a polishing brush on, they didn't, weren't going to scrape it. He wouldn't go for the scrapeable thing, you know?
Right.
They just hit him with a polishing brush.
He tried to
get something. They try to get some of the villagers out of his teeth, you know? He goes,
You told me he was the mean. I mean, if he liked you, you were fine. But, like, he hated Macho Man.
He hated me for the first 8 years. He beat me to death.
For the first 8 years?
Yeah.
That's a long time. I mean, when did you guys actually break bread and you became...
Probably after the Japanese thing with Inoki.
Yeah.
You're okay. You know? Why didn't you ask me for help? I said, dude, I...
Now, didn't he, though... He had you so bamboozled that he would tell you, Terry, tonight we drink wine. And then you guys would drink.
Dude.
And if you didn't drink, then you were afraid to get
hit. Let me tell you the biggest mistake I ever made. Well, I can't say that.
Well, we're on satellite radio. You can say anything you want.
I can't say that. But anyway.
Is it true that Andre used to take shits on guys' beds? Well, we people have talked about that.
In Japan, he couldn't fit the little plastic bathrooms, you know.
Right.
And, you know, it was very uncomfortable. I couldn't even, because it was a mold. The sink and the toilet and the shower was like a plastic mold.
Right.
I mean, I couldn't even open my legs. It was so small between the sink and the bathtub, the toilet was there. So Andre had a hard time fitting anywhere. And so, like, at the hotels and stuff, it'd be time to go down to the bus and, you know, ring my phone up. Just these weird ding-ding ring on these old-time phones.
Right.
Your boss, come down to my room. I didn't know if you had the maid.
Boss.
I didn't know if you had the maid.
Do it again. Do it again. How you doing?
Boss, come to my room. He'd laugh. I'd go down there, dude. He had spread the newspaper out in the bed, and there was like a pile of shit. It looked like a Clydesdale. And I said, damn, Andre. He goes, yeah. Let's go.
And he would leave that.
I think it was hilarious.
No,
that was the type of ribs he pulled.
He loved, he was smooth, and he loved women, and he was, I mean, he
dude,
fucked
he
all.
Had more girls, it was crazy.
Now,
the girls loved
how him. Big, would he have a big dick?
Bro, I don't know. I ain't going there.
Well, I mean, I'm just asking.
Imagine. You know, you've had a few. I'm sure you popped a few Miller Lights before you've gotten in the ring or anything like that. Has there ever been a match that you got in the ring and you're like, damn, I'm drunk?
Everyone.
I mean, really, like one in particular where you're like,
I've had my moments.
Hey, one time we were in Binghamton, New York, right? And we had Scott Hall. It was me, Scott Hall.
That's equal to a disaster right there.
Yeah, Binghamton, New York, me, Scott Hall, Hogan, Brutus, I don't know who, and Scott Hall goes, man, guys, I got this new young boy, man. He's a fucking mark. He'll do anything I tell him. Watch. He goes, young boy, come here. And the guy's like 18, 19, 20, no, the guy's like 22, 23 years old. He goes, Hogan needs 3 cases of Miller Lite, and I need 2. Go down to the fucking store and get them. That's how they talk to these guys in the back. He went down there, got it, iced all up. Hogan got so drunk. Remember, we got in a fight with the your private pilot because he wasn't going to pull us out on time because he'd been on the clock too many hours, remember?
Yeah, I remember.
And if we waited like another 2 minutes on the runway, we'd have to spend the night.
Oh, yeah.
And you went up there and said, let me tell you something, brother. You're going to get this fucking bird in the air right now, my friend, or I'm going to grab the yoke for you.
Well, you had to get back to work.
Well, yeah. That's when Brutus got all drunk.
Oh, yeah. I fell asleep.
And threatened to beat me up. Did you ever hear that?
No.
We're on this plane that Hogan rented, right? And it's like, I don't know, like $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 an hour. And they, you know, they make sure that you don't, like, fuck up the plane. You got to put a deposit down on it, right? So Terry is and I are in the back seat where Hogan falls asleep. He's dead out. And next thing you know, Brutus is, like, throwing. He's drunk and all messed up. And Brutus starts spilling Diet Coke everywhere and just being a real fucking heathen, like staining the carpets on this plane. So I go, Brutus, man, you know, you need to chill out. Hogan's going to have to pay for all this. And he goes, Brutus is, I love Brutus. My buddy goes, let me tell you something, you little fucking asshole. Fucking Hogan ain't here to save you right now. So I'm going to beat the fuck out of you. And I go, I just look at him like, whoa. What do you mean? He goes, that's right. Hogan's dead ass asleep, and I've been with him longer than you have. And I'm going to kick your fucking ass when we get off this plane if you talk to me like that again. Okay. I want this. Hogan, wake up, man. Brutus is being a fucking dick.
Brutus can't whip his own ass.
One time, Brutus was out to dinner with Ron Diaz, who we all know, and I was out there, and he was literally, I don't know what he was on or what he was.
Monkey juice, probably. Monkey juice.
He was reduced to grunts and clicks. Like, he couldn't even order his dinner or nothing. I mean, hey, just grunts and clicks was all that was coming out of him.
The biggest heat we ever got is with the French Inn for the grand opening, right, for Linda's restaurant, and Brutus is on the monkey juice. Big time. Remember the old monkey juice? Yeah. The GHB? And,
oh, that's right. That's what I guarantee you. That's what he was on.
And monkey.
Was that Renutrient stuff? They're actually selling it at GNC.
It was legal then. It was legal then.
GNC. Yeah.
Oh, I love the Renutrient.
Well, anyway, Brutus does like three or four fucking capfuls, and Hogan and I are in eating dinner, and Linda comes in just mad as fuck and says, "Terry, fucking Brutus is scaring people away. He's in the bushes, passed out. People are not going to want to come in here if they see a big fucking guy here." So Terry goes, "Well, go wake him up." So Linda goes to wake him up, taps him on the shoulder, and Brutus gets up and starts acting like a monkey.
Just goes straight up out of the bushes.
He's walking around acting like, that's how fucking uptight Linda is. Let's say if you and I were out drinking by the poolside and we're out to dinner later that night and you pass out, Heather, with my wife, would be like,
she'd be making fun of me.
We'd be making ribbing you the whole nine yards.
Her and my wife would be there greasing.
Yeah, we'd be making me ribbing. One time, me and Hogan are at the Bahamas, all fucked up. And remember when I passed out at dinner? And she goes, Terry, what did you do to him? He goes, I didn't do anything. Bubba fucking drank way too much on his own. And he slaps the shit out of me when she goes to the bathroom and says, "You're getting me heat, brother. You need to wake up. Kick out. Remember that? Anyway,
I'm out.
I'll tell you what a match I really enjoyed. All kidding aside, like, was you and The Rock. Like, did you guys have, like, a mutual respect for each other? I don't know. There was something special about
that
match.
The Rock got heat because Terry went over. Remember?
I didn't go over.
The Rock went over.
I know you didn't go over, theoretically, but remember, I mean, the fans.
Well, they were doing everything they could to bury my ass. They brought me back for a rib, and I stuck it up their cahooties.
Remember that? That was in Toronto. I was there for WrestleMania.
Yep. WrestleMania. So was Pete from Wheel Tech.
Oh, God.
Johnny Fitness.
What's Johnny Fitness doing nowadays?
Dude, he called me out of nowhere. It sounded like he was in a hollow cave going, "Hogan, it's Pete." He was going, when I got the message, it goes, Hulkster. Like he's doing a cheer. I said, "Who the fuck is this?" He goes, "This is your old buddy Pete from Wheel Tech. If you need anything, give me a call."
You say, "I don't need any methamphetamine right now, Pete. I'm fine." I'm all loaded up on that.
It's all good. Anyway,
I know you got to get going.
He was a restless dude.
The what?
The natives are restless, man.
Yeah.
David Houston told me to take the gloves off. He said, "You can't sit back anymore."
No. If you would, I wish we'd. I'm not trying to say anything, but if you would have postured this from day one,
dude,
it probably
I was trying to be cool. I know.
Yeah, taking the high road will get you nowhere, unfortunately.
Especially when you're dealing with an insatiable fucking gold digging bitch.